Dear friends, we have come to the next item of this mindfulness for young adult session. So that is basically a short Dhamma sermon related to a particular subject. And these days we are discussing Kaggavisana Sutta. Kaggavisana Sutta is translated as rhinoceros horn by Bhikkhu Bodhi. So Kaggavisana. Kagga is the rhinoceros and Visana is the horn, and basically it simply signifies the secluded practice, and it's a kind of a stability. Also, it is signifying, because the rhinoceros horn is a fairly stable and quite steady representation of the mind. So during the Buddha's time, especially many monks, after taking a kind of a meditation instruction from the Buddha, so they went for seclusion and they continued their practice, and they were able to have attainments. So likewise, secluded practice is one of the important aspect of this teaching, and therefore secluded practice as well as kind of an association with others are both needed time to time. So at the beginning we need fair amount of seclusion, because the mind is quite vulnerable and it is always distracting, going here and there. There is no any restraint in the mind. So at that time, going to a monastery, going to a forest and to a place where you find silence is quite helpful. And once you develop fair amount of vipassana, especially, then you can actually see yourself, or you can test yourself. You can verify your mind. You can examine your mind, even among others, how the mind is reacting. On such situation, it is not wise to, in a way, continuously stay alone, because it might lead to even wrong ideas, wrong understandings. Rather, if you deal with others and how the interaction influence your mind. So if your mind is capable of maintaining equilibrium, maintaining some sort of stillness, stability, even amidst various ups and downs, various, say, troubles, even that time, if your mind is capable of maintaining its stability, so that indicates some amount of spiritual maturity. Now, in this Kaggavisana Sutta, basically the guideline is given for the secluded practice. And as I mentioned before, the commentator actually has attributed all these verses available in the Kaggavisana Sutta to a previous Paccheka Buddha. Paccheka Buddha is a person who self-realized or enlightened by himself, but not teaching to the others in like a Sammasambuddha. And Paccheka Buddha is not establishing a sasana, not establishing a kind of a generation of monks, sangha. Rather, he live alone. And there may be various other Paccheka Buddhas as well. And with them, they may be sometimes living together. And mostly, they are dwelling on the caves and likewise. So typically, it is accepted that Paccheka Buddhas are available only when the Sammasambuddha is not available. And when during the Sammasambuddha's period, there are no Paccheka Buddhas. So it's a kind of a rule available. Anyway, now we are discussing one by one, going through various verses. It has actually around 40 verses. Now we have covered around 15-20 verses, and today we have to cover this one. So let us come to the verse today. Evam dutiyena saha mammas vacha bilapo abhisajjanava etam bhayam ayatin pekkamano Eko chare kagga visana kappu. In many verses, this eko chare kagga visana kappu. So this is a kind of a repetitive phrase available, where one has decided to live alone, one has decided to maintain one's seclusion like a rhinoceros horn. So this is repeated phrase available in many of the verses. Now, before going to analyze the verse, let us discuss the story behind this verse. So according to the commentary, so there's a very interesting story to this verse. And one time there was a king, and he's kind of a very soft-minded king. Typically, kings are quite rude, and sometimes they are very strong. But this king, on the other hand, is a very good king, and again, he has a very soft mind. Now, by the way, he wanted to become a monk. Even though he is a king, he has a wish to become a monk. Now, that is also interesting, because sometimes people think that the monkhood is only for, say, to a person who has no any other responsibility or who has no any other group of companions, who has nothing to do, so something like that. Sometimes people think. But on the other hand, there are people who are leading some very good positions, who are in a way having a lot of responsibilities in one's social life, and again having a lot of wealth and kind of a distinguished person, but still internally one may maintain kind of a monk life. So they don't much have big intention to associate with many others. Unlike others, they are not much willing to participate in parties and all those social gatherings. And even though they have enough wealth and they are not much greedy about them and not too much attached to them, and they have kind of a mindset of a renunciation. So this is also interesting. But on the other hand, there are certain people, they don't have much. I mean, they are very poor, and they are, I mean, spending very difficult life, still so attached to what they have, and so greedy to certain things, and they can't give up things. They are, I mean, renunciation is far away from them. But there are others who are quite rich, quite wealthy, but still they can simply leave things aside very easily. So they are having such kind of a renunciative mind. So that is a kind of an interesting phenomena. Buddha has discussed on certain other suttas how even when people are having so much things, they are not attached to that. And they are willing to give up them at any time. So they have that kind of a interesting mindset. So this king also someone like that. So he has a kingdom, he has all these say companions, ministers, his wife, everybody is there, his queen is there, but he wants to become a monk. Now, once that is said to his ministers, so they said, no, no, you don't do like that. So our kingdom will be destroyed if you do like that. So please wait till you are getting a son. So now ministers have convinced this king. And so since this king is a kind of a soft-minded person, so he listened to them. So ultimately, so he stopped. And later, queen become pregnant. Now, king again put the proposal. Now, queen may get a son, so I want to become a monk. So kind of an interesting story. So now, again, you know, this ministers, you know, that time also ministers are really, really interesting. So they again make a story. No, no, you should not go. So we don't know exactly whether this will be a prince or a princess. So, you know, during those old days, we didn't have scanners. So therefore, they couldn't recognize till the baby is born. They don't know whether this baby will be a girl or a boy. So therefore, ministers put another point. So don't go, because we don't exactly know whether the baby would be a girl or a boy. So then again, the king has to give up the idea. Now, after some time, now the queen has given birth to a prince boy. Now it's a prince. Now again, the king put in the proposal. Now you all got a prince. Now later you can appoint him as the king. I want to become a monk. Now again, the queen and the ministers again try to convince him. No, no, please don't go right now. I mean, still the prince is very young. He can't do anything. So you have to wait till the prince is able to do the kingship. He is able to at least walk. At least he has some knowledge. Till that, you should wait. So they have put a lot of information, a lot of convincing ideas. And ultimately, again, king has given up his idea. Again, he waited. Now, several years spent. And again, another time, again, the king want to become a monk. He want to renunciate everything. Now, this time, he become quite strong. And he said, now I am not going to change my mind. So, you guys should continue this kingdom with this son, with this prince. And I am now going to leave. Now, they can't stop him. Now, he is leaving, but the people also following him. They are weeping and they are crying. And the queen is also following. The young prince also following. And they all reach to a forest boundary. And their king said, now I am going alone to this forest. You should not come. Now he's a kind of an order. Now ministers and the queen stopped. But queen made another interesting point here. So what she did, so she asked the prince to go along with his son, his father, that is the king. Because prince is the one now breaking the rule, so king can't punish him. So therefore, king has to accept the prince. Now what the queen did was sent the prince along with the king. Now king can't stop, so prince also following him. Now we can have an interesting point here. That when Buddha came to Kapilavastu, so at that time, Ahula Mata, Yasodhara, was looking from the window and she saw Buddha arriving. And later, as Buddha leaving, she showed Buddha to the prince Rahula and asked him to get all the inheritance from the Buddha. Then Prince Rahula came to the Buddha and he was quite happy by being with the Buddha. And he's telling that your presence is quite happy to me, pleasing to me. So please give me the inheritance. Then Buddha took him and ordained him. So it's kind of an unexpected thing happened there. Here also, by the way, the little prince accompanied the king and now they all both went to the forest and the queen and the ministers, they actually stopped and they waited for some time because queen had a kind of an idea, this king can't do the monkhood with this little prince. So ultimately both will return. So she's expecting that to happen and as a result of that, they were also waiting. Now, king went with the little prince and they start to spend time in the forest. Now, king is in a trouble because he is not alone. So, he has to look after the prince. Prince is not capable of maintaining this forest life. So, he's used to this palace and all the luxurious items, royal meals. But during the forest, what they are getting is a very poor kind of a rough food. So the prince is not happy and he become quite weak, lean, and his complexion become rough. And as a result of that, now king was somewhat fed up. because he has sort of this soft mind. So he is thinking, so I can't continue this monkhood with this little prince. He's my son. I have to look after him. And he's sometimes crying, telling that he is hungry. And he's asking various luxurious items. He's not used to this kind of a forest dwelling. So I can't do like this. Now that is representing in this verse. Thus, if I had a partner, I would incur words of address or verbal friction. Now always the king, this monk, has to look after the son, look after the prince, because otherwise he will be in trouble. The prince will be in trouble because he's a young boy. He can't do anything. So the king has to look after the little prince. So the monkhood is now getting more and more troublesome. It's impossible. So now the king decided to return back and somehow return the prince back to the palace and come back. Now, fortunately, when they were going, the queen and the ministers were staying there and they went to the same place where they have departed. And now what the king did was he actually made a trick telling that your mother is there. So I am not coming very close. Your mother is there. So please go and be with your mother. So prince was quite happy because he was not happy while being in this forest. Now he is happy to be with his mother, the queen. And now the prince is returning back to the mother. So the ministers recognized the little prince and he was taken back to the queen. And queen asked, where is your father? Oh, he's there. I mean, you can invite him as well. And then immediately queen asked ministers to go and invite the king. But king has went back. Now he has become alone. Now only he was able to accomplish his wish. He had this wish of renunciation for a long, long time, but due to many, many reasons and during many occasions, he had to give up his idea. Now only he has become really secluded. And after a while, he has maintained his seclusion and he has practiced diligently and he became a Pacheka Buddha. Now, this is the kind of a story this Pacheka Buddha is mentioning in this verse. Thus, if I had a partner, I would incur fond words of address or verbal friction. Looking out for this peril in the future, one should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. Now, as I mentioned, this whole sutta, rhinoceros sutta, is pointing out secluded practice, how to be alone, what are the advantages of being alone, solitary practice. So therefore, don't misunderstand that this sutta theme is that. So there are many other suttas talking about a typical, worldly life or typical what you call household life as well. But this sutta's theme is mainly the solitary practice, being alone. So that is the point emphasized again and again. So here in this verse, actually, therefore we can understand. So sometimes when you have a partner who is not supportive to our spiritual practice, then we'll be in a little trouble. On the other hand, if you are able to have kind of a practice without much of a trouble from your partner, that has become a kind of a blessing. So therefore, it's a kind of a mutual understanding how to get the support of your family members for your own practice. So it's kind of a challenge in a way. So that is why if you have some sort of a person, your wife, your husband, your children, who are also like-minded, who also understand the value of the spiritual practice, then it is kind of a very blissful situation where you all can practice. And that is something even today people are encouraging because of the COVID pandemic. So they are again and again emphasizing the value of this mindfulness practice and having a balanced mind and to have a friction-free mind, unstressed mind, because the stress, whatever the stress that one is having, is quite detrimental to one's immunity. So having kind of a very good balanced mind throughout the whole family is quite recommended, even in this practice, even in this pandemic. So if you are able to have a kind of a family, your family members are also supportive, and they too participate time to time, they also give you some support. So that is in a way a real blessing. But there are certain other occasions, say husband is practicing, but wife is not like that. Or wife is practicing, husband doesn't like that. So likewise, there are some difficulties on such situation. But if the other person understands, even though he or she is not practicing, if the other person is at least a little supportive or not disturbing, that is at least good. So likewise, in this whole samsara, sometimes we get certain companions, certain partners who are quite supportive to the spiritual practice. And on the other hand, sometimes it is the opposite. They are causing us a lot of trouble. And because of them, sometimes our good qualities also become deteriorated. And we also sort of becoming kind of helpless. So therefore, this companionship is something that is quite crucial. On the other hand, there are certain situations where, because of the husband, sometimes wife is getting more and more benefits into the spiritual side. Or sometimes because of the wife, the husband is getting more and more benefits to the spiritual side. So likewise, those situations are also available. Because the spiritual friendship is one of the very important things that Buddha has mentioned. You know that one occasion when Balananda mentioned that he perceived like this holy life, half of the holy life is the spiritual companionship or the Kalyana Mitata. But then Buddha refused that and he mentioned it is not the half, it is the whole of the of this whole spiritual path, spiritual practice is because of the good friendship. So therefore, having good friendship is quite important. So having kind of a mutual understanding is quite important. And as I mentioned, if you are able to maintain kind of a balance, you are maintaining kind of a family life, again maintaining some spiritual life, so then it's a kind of a balance way that you can maintain your, say, lay life. And there are such situations. Say, for example, there are in the literature of the Dhamma, in the during the Buddha's time, there are such people. Say, for example, there is interesting sutta called Migasala Sutta in Anguttara Nikaya Dasaka Nipata, 10th factor part. There is one lady called Migasala. She is mentioning to Venerable Ananda that her father, and he is called Purana, and he spent at the beginning kind of family life. So that is why Migasala, the daughter, is born. And after some time, his father has become celibate. And then he went on celibate life, and he is a good practitioner, and he attained second attainment, that is Sakadagama, once returned. He became a once returner. And on the other hand, she has an uncle, that is the Bigasala has an uncle from his father's side, and his name is called Isidatta. And Migasala is telling that he actually spent the whole life kind of a family life. There is no any kind of a celibate life for him. But he spent a typical family life. But he too became Sakadala. Now there's a question to Migasala. So Migasala is the daughter, young woman. So she is in a problem because father, during his lifetime, during the latter part of his lifetime, he spent a celibate life, and at the death, after the death, Buddha mentioned he attained Sakadagama. And she has an uncle, Isiddhartha. He never spent a celibate life. After the death, again, Buddha is mentioning he too attained Sakadagama. Now, this can't be. So, this is the point that Migasala is pointing out to Venerable Ananda. So, Venerable Ananda also couldn't give a valid answer to this Migasala. And Venerable Ananda came and reported this question to Buddha. And then Buddha mentioned there are differences in cognition, there are differences in wisdom. Even though your father Purana spent a celibate life, even though your uncle Isiddhartha didn't spend a celibate life, so Isiddhartha is a kind of a wise person, so he has kind of a wisdom as well. So there are discrepancies, there are differences between people. From outside appearance, you can't simply see such spiritual qualities. From appearance, it seems like they both have the same qualities. They are behaving similarly, but internally they have different skills. So Buddha point out there very interestingly that the wisdom is one important aspect of this practice. So if one is quite wise and has listened to the teaching, and time to time he is practicing as much as possible, and sometimes was capable of maintaining freedom of mind, and such understanding that wisdom is showing him that all his unwholesome qualities at the moment he is having can have an end when he is continuously practicing. At the moment he is not fulfilling it, true, but he is quite convinced about the practice. He is quite confident about the practice. So that is pointed out very beautifully in this Migasala Sutta, where simple morality is not the only point. From outside look, probably you can see two people are equally moral, equally virtuous. But internally, there are differences in their cognitive side, in their wisdom side. So if one is more wiser, so he knows very well about the teaching. He knows very well about his own practice. And time to time, he is enjoying the freedom of mind. And he knows very well, convinced very well, that with this type of practice, I can purify myself. So that understanding, that conviction is with him. As a result of that, his death is not a typical kind of a detrimental type of death. Rather, he will be going in a progressive path. So therefore, it's very difficult to see that even though people are sort of sometimes moral, sometimes practicing, so there are still differences among people. And Buddha mentioned there categorically that we should not determine from outside what would be their next birth. Because only the Buddha can decide what are their internal spiritual skills, internal spiritual qualities. Those are quite distinct, those are quite different from person to person. One person, even though he may be living a lay life, he may have very sharp faculties. Spiritual understanding or wisdom is quite high, even though one is living a lay life. And as I mentioned, even the kings, even though they are maintaining their kingship, still they have enunciative idea. And there may be even monks, even though they are monks, they may wish for kind of a lay life. So these differences are there among people. So it is therefore very difficult for one to see all these distinctions among people. So therefore Buddha mentioned that no point of measuring people, no point of assessing people, that you can't come to a real conclusion. you can't really determine whether they are wise or they are with sharp faculties, or they are not wise or they are not with sharp faculties. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
I'm sorry, Bhante. Currently, there are 7 questions. Question number 1. It's a general question. Dear Bhante, during the last Saturday discussion at the monastery, I heard Most Venerable Bhante Dhammajiva mentioning that it is possible to understand and clarify the delusion caused by sannya, sannya level, which results in taking sannya as me, mine, and my atma. When someone explores the deep philosophical aspects of Dhamma. However, since this understanding does not come through or cultivated via Vedana and Rupa levels, it cannot be practically realized within oneself. Appreciate if Bhante can clarify this a bit. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Chatu, I didn't really get the question. So
I also don't really understand the question. I'll read it out again. It might not make sense. I heard Most Venerable Bhante Dhammajiva mentioning that it is possible to understand and clarify the delusion caused by sannya, which results in taking sannya as me, mine, and my atma when someone explores the deep philosophical aspects of Dhamma. However, since this understanding does not come through or cultivated via Vedana and Rupa levels, it cannot be practically realized with oneself. And that's the end of the question.
Okay. I think you are referring recent Dhamma sermon made by Bhante Dhammajiva. So there are, I think last Thursday, I think during the Dhamma sermon, this type of thing is mentioned as far as I can remember. Recognizing the body as me and mind is one level in a way, and recognizing feelings as me, mine, myself is another way of identification, and recognizing perception, sannya, as me, mine, myself is another type of identification, and recognizing various skills, various say creativity, various other say thoughts, habits, etc., as me and mine. So that is the sankhara, mental formations. As me, mine, myself is another level of identification. So all these are, in a way, different types of identification. And again, the vijnana, that is, say, cognition, consciousness, recognizing any type of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, all these things as me, mine, myself, is another level of identification. So all these are very subtle in a way. So recognizing any of these is not easy. But as mentioned, recognizing body as me, mine, myself is the most gross form of identification. Now, so that can be in a way understood during the Kayanupassana practice. So that is where we can begin and assume that you are developing Dhatu Manasikara, element meditation. And typically we have kind of a wrong understanding, this body belongs to me, this body is mine, and this body is myself. So that is the typical understanding we have. But as you understand, this body consists of various bodily parts, head, hair, body hair, bone, skeleton, different components. So there are, I mean, you may lose that kind of compactness view, Gana Sanya, compactness view, you may lose, and you may understand, okay, it is not a kind of a solid body. It is not a kind of a unit. It is not a something compact. Rather, it consists of so many parts, very much like you are disassembling a vehicle. Say you have a vehicle. Suppose your vehicle is a very good branded car. So it's therefore you are so attached to it, and you are really loving it, and is so precious, and it is a beautiful, very valuable car. So a lot of importance is given, a lot of value is given to that. But suppose one day you are dismantling everything, you are disassembling everything, you are putting wheels somewhere, you are putting all the parts, the equipment, different places. And as you are doing this dismantling, so you may ultimately not get a car. It's a combination of so many components, thousand and thousand components, little components. Once we put together, then we call it a car. So this is the point that we have to remember. So this thing happened as we continue our, say, element meditation. So we have given sort of importance to this body, and we have identified with it, understood it as me, mine, myself. But as we continue the practice, and it's more and more challenging, more and more our insights are sort of questioning us. Is it you? Is it me? Where is I? So where, which part is I? And everything is very sort of transient. How can have a lasting person, lasting individual here? So likewise, this disintegration or dissecting of this whole body ultimately will show that there is no person, there is no individual, there is no I inside or associate with the body. So similarly, now in a way, logically, we can understand that there is no person, being, individual in the body, but it is quite difficult to understand in the Vedana, feelings, perceptions, etc., because they are related to the mind. So they are actually, you need a fair amount of understanding to the mind, or the mindfulness into the mind, where you can recognize various perceptions, how they are arising in your mind. Say, for example, when you feel something, when there is a pleasurable feeling is going on in the body, whenever you have some attachment towards that, whenever your mind is going to grasp that, if you are able to look at that grasping and eliminate that grasping, so then you can detach from that pleasurable feeling and look at it objectively. So similarly, suppose there is a kind of a perception going on in your mind. Suppose that you have sort of a perception towards your child, towards your boss, towards your neighbor. So rather than simply accepting it as the truth, if you are able to step back and look at it as a perception, this is a perception. So I have kind of a negative perception towards my neighbor. I have a kind of a negative perception towards my so-and-so. So likewise, you can objectively look at it. So when you are able to look at like that, then you can avoid identifying with it. Perception is merely a perception. So Buddha mentioned, so all these perceptions are like a mirage. So it's very difficult in a way to understand, because the mirage is very closer to water. So to a person who doesn't have any understanding, may get misled thinking that mirage is water. So similarly, various perceptions that we have, able to sort of objectively look at it. So this is a perception. These are merely perceptions. These are various signs available in the mind. So if we are able to look at it like that, like objectively, then we are able to sort of have a kind of detached look, have a kind of unassociated look to these perceptions. So it is in a way a little difficult. I mean, perceptions can be handled during the Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, where you are able to look at the mind more closely, more carefully, and these subtle aspects may be then slowly available to us, and we may understand how we are adding certain perceptions. Actually, that particular person may change, but we are maintaining the same perception. Say, for example, that you are associating someone and he made a mistake, suppose several years ago, but you are carrying the same perception in your mind for many years, and next time when you see him, through that perception you are recognizing him. It's a kind of a preconceived idea that you are looking at him. Probably he might have completely changed. So therefore, identifying with this perception is one of the points or kind of a situation that we need to understand. So I don't know whether I really answered the question, but these are few things that I like to share with you.
Question number 2 of 7. This is mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Sir, my sitting mindful practice is observing the breath, and as instructed in your guided sessions, I first start with paying attention to the body and the posture. After settling on the sitting posture, I can shift my focus to the breath and observe it naturally. I have been practicing like this for some time based on the instructions given during this program. I observe the differences of in-breath and out-breath, and also comparisons among the breaths seems visible. After 10 to 15 minutes of focused attention, the breath starts getting subtle and fading. Sometimes this fading away happens until the breath disappears and I enter a very spacious space without anything in front of me. At a distance, I can observe if there are any sounds. After some time, the breath appears in a subtle manner and disappears again. I can remain in this relaxed state until the bell rings, finishing 1 hour sitting session. I tend to feel the body posture a bit now, hardness and softness in some places, which I don't know exact, and I don't know the exact location. Sometimes patches of hot and cold nature are in the posture as well. I have heard that you are mentioning about observing elemental characteristics, and don't know if I should start doing that now. My question is, when is the right time and someone is ready for this phase in mindfulness? When is someone ready for this shift in phase in mindfulness to the focus of elemental characteristics? Should I jump at the first time when I note them, or give some time until the elemental characteristics are clear and evident as the key observations? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, this is actually a difficult question to answer in a way, because for some people, anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing itself is enough, and they can continue their practice along that line. So that is what mentioned in the Anapanasati Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya, with 16 steps. Buddha mentioned that when one is continuing one's practice, one is able to fulfill all four types of satipatthana, all four foundations of satipatthana through anapanasati itself. But there are others who sometimes get various implications of, say, elements, manifestations of elements, and there you can actually recognize the element characteristics and you can divert your practice to elements. And that is also a very interesting part. So ultimately, by the way, everything, all these different practices are taking us to the same understanding, but these different parts are available. So therefore, I mean, if these elements characteristics are, I mean, evident to you, I mean, they are coming by themselves, they are appearing by themselves, and they are quite evident, then there is no harm. You can recognize them. And on the other hand, if your breath is also interesting and you are able to maintain your mindfulness practice and you are progressing, you feel that and your mindfulness is improving, and you can have enough clarity of mind during the walking, and there also you can understand some interesting phenomena, that is also in kind of satisfactory answer. Now, by the way, I like to do in a little differently. Now, during the sitting practice, you can suppose you can continue in breathing. I mean, the mindfulness on breathing. During the walking practice, by the way, you see whether you can see element characteristics. So then you are getting the benefits of both practices. So if your mind is going towards more towards the element characteristics, so if you are getting more benefits through that, because it's a kind of a interesting path to develop wisdom. This Dhatu Manasikara, element meditation, is one of the very important meditation practice in developing wisdom. And therefore, if you feel comfortable in walking practice, recognizing various elements and their behavior, and you feel that you are progressing in that, so you may continue doing that in the walking. And during the sitting, if you feel that you are continuing with your breathing and that is also progressing, that you are sort of gaining from both sides. And on the other hand, during the sitting, if you feel that now you are feeling certain element characteristics, that is also welcome. Therefore, it's difficult to foresee what is going to happen in the future, because we have to see then and there how it is, how the mind is behaving. Accordingly, we have to adjust our path. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 7. This one is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, could you please explain what does it mean by pariyuttana in comparison to other types? Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, so this is discussed in the Dhamma. So the Vitikkhama, Pariyuttana and Anusaya. So these are different levels of defilements available in the mind. Now, Vitikkhama is the one that you do some transgressional level where you can't maintain your precepts. Assume that you get angry and you start to blame and you start to quarrel. And that is where the transgression happens. But Pariyuttana is where you feel all these various defilements, anger available in the mind, but you are able to control yourself. Internally burning, internally the anger is available, but you are not going to transgression. You are not going to do any kind of blaming, quarreling, anything. But you can understand the mind is going to kind of an uncomfortable situation. The unwholesome qualities are there, present, available in the mind. So, Anusaya is in a way very difficult to understand. It is very much like latent, hidden. So, when Anusaya is present, when the causes are there, when the conditions are there, it can come to the surface of the mind. Then we can say it is the manifestation of those defilements, and that is Pariyuttana. You can see like, say, there are various similes are given. Kind of a sleeping cobra is very much like Anusaya. And when he's waking up, that is very much like the Pariyuttana. And when he's biting, is very much like the transgression. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 7. This one's actually Singhalese. I might give it to Auntie to read out. Thank you.
So, Ati Gauravaniya Swamin Vahansa. Paryanka Bhavana. Yesterday, Hamasa. Yamiya Sakmanin Pasu Paryanka Sadaha. Supurudu Kushanekamata Vadivi. පිටට හේතු වීම සඳහා තව කුෂන් එකක් තබාගෙන පරිබරි ගැසී සුපුරුදු කමඨහන වන උදරයේ පිම්බීම හැකිලීම දෙස හිත යොමු කිරීමට යද්දී හෘද ස්පන්දනය වෙනදාට වඩා ප්‍රකට බව දැනුනි. ඉන්පසු මම කමඨහන විදිහට එය දිහා නොකඩවා බලාගෙන සිටියෙමි. සෑහෙන වේලාවක් යනතුරු එය පැවතියේය. හදිසියෙම නොදැන මගේ හිත වෙන අතකට යොමු වී ඇති බව දැක නැවත හෘද ස්පන්දනය වෙත යොමුවන විට හෘද ස්පන්දනය අතුරුදහන්ව හිත තැන්පත්ව තිබුණ බව නිරීක්ෂණය විය. ඉන්පසුව හිස් බවත් සිතුවිලිත් මාරුවෙන් මාරුවට හිත වෙනස් වීම නිරීක්ෂණය විය. ඒ එක්කම මාගේ පිට කුෂන් එකට හේතුව ඇති ප්‍රදේශයේ ඉතා තදබල වේදනාවක් දැනෙන්නට විය. මම ඒ දෙස බලාගෙන කිසිදු හේතුවක් උඩ නැගිටින්නේ නැතුව මුළු කාලය පුරා පැය එකක රැඳී සිටින්නට අදිටන් කරගත්තේය. වේදනාව එන්න එන්න දරුණු විය. එවිට මම කෙසේ හෝ ඉන්නවා යන අදිටනින් තව වේලා වේදනාව දෙස බලා සිට බැරිම තැන විනාඩි 40කට පසු නැගිට්ටේය. භාවනාව තවදුරටත් දියුණු කර ගැනීමට උපදෙස් ඉතා ගෞරවයෙන් ඔබ වහන්සේගෙන් ඉල්ලා සිටිමි.
ඔව් මෙතනදී ඉතින් يعني ප්‍රති කීපයක් ඉතින් කතා කරන්න පුළුවන්. එකක් තමයි අපිට ඔය වගේ වේදනාව දරාගෙන වේදනාව දිහා බලාගෙන යන්න පුළුවන් ක්‍රමයක් තියෙනවා. එහෙම නැත්නම් ඉතින් ඉරියව් මාරු කළා අපිට පහසුවෙන් යන්න පුළුවන් ක්‍රමයක්ත් තියෙනවා. මෙතන ඇත්තටම බලාපොරොත්තු වෙන්නේ නැහැ හැමතිස්සෙම වේදනාවත් එක්ක සටන් කිරීමක්. අපි මේ වේදනාව කොයිතරම් දුරට දරන්න පුළුවන්ද කියලා බලන එහෙම ටෙස්ට් එකක් නෙමෙයි ඉතින් මෙතන තියෙන්නේ. මෙතන අපි බලන්න තියෙන්නේ මේ මනසයි කයයි සමබරව තියෙන්න පුළුවන්ද. මොකද කයෙන් ඒ වමනා කරන සැපවත් බව අපිට ලැබෙන්නේ නැත්තම් සුවදායි පහසු ඉරියව්වේ ඒ ඉරියව්වෙන් ලැබෙන සුවය අපිට ලැබෙන්නේ නැත්තම් මනසේ එකඟතාවය ගොඩනැගෙන්නේ නැහැ. සබුදුරයන් වහන්සේ කියනවා සුඛිනෝ චිත්තං සමාධියති. කය සැපවත් නම් කය සුවපත් නම් තමයි සිත සමාධිමත් වෙන්නේ. ඒ නිසා කය හුඟා වේදනා බරිතව ඉරියව් එකම ඉරියව්ව හුඟා වෙලාවක් පවත්වන්න ගිහිල්ලා වේදනා බරිත වුණාට පස්සේ අපි ඉතින් එතන අර අපි කියන්නේ කාගෙන ඉන්නවා කියලා. එහෙම එකක් නෙමෙයි ඉතින් මෙතන බලාපොරොත්තු වෙන්නේ. ඒ තුල ඉතින් එහෙමත් පුළුවන් ඉතින් කෙනෙකුට හුඟාක් වීරයවන්ත කෙනෙකුට ඉවසීමෙන් යුක්ත එහෙම යන්න පුළුවන්. හැබැයි එතන සමහර වෙලාවට හුඟක් වෙලාවට වෙන්නේ ඒ හරහා මනසේ ආතතියක් ගොඩනැගෙන. ඒ ආතතිය හරහා තමන්ට භවනාව එපා වෙන එක. වමනා කරන මානසික සමබරතාවයේ ගිලිහෙන එක තමයි වෙන්නේ. මනස විසිරෙන එකයි වෙන්නේ. ඊට වඩා බලාම සුදුසි තමන් දැන් ආධුනික මට්ටමක ඉන්නේ විනාඩි 20කට පස්සේ 30කට පස්සේ තමන්ට තේරෙනවා නම් දැන් ඉන්න අමාරුයි මේ ඉරියව්වේ කියලා පොඩ්ඩක් ඉරියව්ව මීට වෙනස් කරන්න. ඒ ගැන හොඳට අවධානයෙන් කරනවා. එතකොට ඉරියව්ව වෙනස් කිරීම නිසා වේදනාවේ අඩුවීමක් දැනෙනවා. ඒකත් හොඳට තමන් දැනගන්නවා. ඉතින් එතකොට අරමුණ මාරුණා කියලා තමන්ට පාඩුවක් කියලා නැහැ. එක දිගට සතිමත් බව තිබිලා තියෙනවා. ඉරියව්ව මාරු කරද්දි සතිමත් බව තිබෙනවා. මාරු කරාට පස්සෙත් සතිය තියෙනවා. ඊට පස්සේ ඕනනම් ඉරියව්ව මාරු කිරීම නිසා කය සුවපත් වුණාට පස්සේ නැවතත් ඒ අපේ සුපුරුදු කමට හඳ ගන්න පුළුවන්. ඒ නිසා මෙතෙන්දී අපේ එක්තරා අන්දමකින් බුද්ධිමත් වෙන්න ඕනේ. මෙතෙන්දී අවශ්‍යයි කායික මානසික සම්බරතාවයක්. එහෙම නැතුව අපි කයෙන් කිසිම සහයෝගයක් ලැබෙන්නේ නැති අවස්ථාවකදී කය මට්ටු කරමින් යන්න ටිකක් අමාරුයි. හොඳයි.
Question number 5 of 8. This one is a general question. Bhante, regarding today's Dhamma sermon, where you highlighted that if one can maintain an unwavering mind to some extent, is it unwise to be secluded too much, but should inquire how the mind works while amongst others? What are the downfalls if there is too much seclusion and isolated practice is conducted? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, so this is an interesting question. Actually, I can refer Venerable Ajahn Chah. So if you consider Venerable Ajahn Chah's type of practice, there's a community always. There's a group of monks. It's not they sometimes go through Dutang practice, Tudong practice and all. But ultimately, they return to the monastery. Monastery has 50-60 monks. And they have to live a community life. So this community living, having a lot of companions, and even amidst all these, to have a balanced mind. So that is challenging, actually. So therefore, seclusion is one aspect of the practice, and that is also necessary, and you need to have that to sort of sharpen your faculties. And once you have some understanding, you definitely have to be with others and see how your mind is reacting. So I just give an example for you to understand. Suppose that you practice a lot of metta alone. And you feel like blissful, and you are like a source of metta, a lot of loving kindness, and you can even give your heart to anyone, and likewise. So you are so compassionate, so loving kindness, and you now overestimate yourself. I have no anger at all. And you are living alone, spreading metta to everyone, all the beings. So you are doing like that. Suppose now, due to some reason, you have to use a public transport, a private bus in Sri Lanka, and to travel to some place. And suppose, and you have given some money to the conductor to get the, say, ticket. Suppose that he didn't return your balance. Now, you get angry sometimes. Now, you were thinking that the anger is far away from me. I mean, I am practicing several months of metta, so much of metta, loving kindness, or spilling of loving kindness, but the conductor didn't return the balance and you get angry. Now, this shows how practical is our practice in a way. I mean, when we are alone, we can have that imaginary states. We can actually practice really diligently. True. But in order to verify our real state, in order to verify our true nature, we have to go through such kind of experiences. So that is why it is important time to time to be with others, to be with other members, and to see our own mind honestly, how it is reacting. Then only we can have a better understanding or better perspective about our own mind. Otherwise, there is a high possibility that we are going to overestimate ourselves, and sometimes we get into wrong views even, because there is no someone to show us what are our problems. Because when we are being with many others, so how we are behaving is observed by many others. So they also feel that this person is going through say kind of a positive way, or this person is going in wrong way. When a question is answered, this person is answering in one way and another person answer in another way. So likewise, in the community life, we have different activities, and sometimes we have to deal with many others. So during such occasions, how we are behaving, so that is being observed by many others. So their input is quite interesting or quite important. To get that in, to get that input, so one has to have this community life. So therefore, the community life or being with others is also a very important aspect of the practice.
Bhante, there is three more questions. Is it okay if we go over time today?
Yeah, we'll try to answer quickly then.
Okay. Question number 6 of 8, general question. Dear Bhante, can you explain Nama Gotra, please?
Nama Gotra. I don't know what you really mean. I mean, typically there's a clan. So, clan Gotra. Now, the present Buddha's clan is Gautama, Gotama. So, likewise, there are different clans available. So, that may be what you are referring here. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 8, walking mindfulness. Dear Bhante, I have been meditating under your guidance and I highly value your knowledge and advice. During today's mindful walk, I began walking at a normal pace by focusing on which foot I put in front. After a while, my pace slowed down as I focused on the different parts of my foot as it made contact with the floor. A few moments later, I began to feel an internal shivering sensation in my legs. As I continued, it felt like I had lost control of my legs. Towards the end of the practice, I began to feel a similar sensation. However, instead of feeling light, the legs felt heavy and each step felt forced. That's the end of the report.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, you can continue, because either feeling lighter or feeling heavier is possible. I mean, we can't guarantee what is going to happen. So we have to have a kind of an open mind. So we simply have to accept it. accept whatever the body is showing. So sometimes it is feeling like heavy, sometimes it is feeling lighter. So you don't have any control. So that is what actually we are, that is why we are actually observing it. More and more you observe like this, you understand these things are changing. You have no control. I mean, even though you expect your, say, experience going to be more and more lighter, sometimes it is shifting. It becomes heavier. And again, it is shifting and beyond your control. And then you understand the non-self characteristic. So the observation is the most important thing. And with a non-judgmental attitude. So you don't have any preferences. Don't maintain any preferences. Let it happen. Your duty is to simply observe. Yeah.
Question number 8. This is the last one. General question. Dear Bhante, could you please explain the difference between, if I say this right, Anushaya and Ashrava, much merits, Bhante. Did that make sense?
The difference between Anushaya and Ashrava?
Yeah, I think that's what it says.
Yeah, so Anushaya and Ashrava, so typically there are 4 asavas mentioned: Kamasava, Bhavasava, Avijjasava, and Dittasava. And sometimes it is simplified to 3, Kamasava, Bhavasava, and Avijjasava, because the Ditti Asava is a type of related to the Avijja, ignorance. And on the other hand, there are 7 Anusaya, Kama Anusaya, Raga Anusaya, Patigaha Anusaya, Avijja Anusaya, Bhavaraga Anusaya. Likewise, there are 7 types of Anusaya. So these are different way of explanation, and the meaning wise, Anusaya very much like mentioned or explained as latent tendencies. Asava, influxes, are explained like when you are maintaining some kind of wrong behavior, some kind of wrong habit for long, long time, it becomes your inherent characteristic. So how, in a way, various defilements are happening in our mind. Say, for example, you are developing some sort of a habit for a long time. Again and again, you are doing the same thing again and again. Now, even without that trigger, even without such object, now such kind of a behavior pattern is available to you now. So that is type of asava where so too much association of a particular type of behavior, too much association of particular way of thinking, too much association of particular way of view. So it has become somewhat inherent
or excuse me, Bhante.
Engraved. Sorry,
yes. Bhante. I think someone wants to clarify this question. Should I clarify? Sorry? Yeah, someone wants to clarify this question. They've put
Can I talk
to you directly? Okay.
Can. Yeah. May you ask the question then?
Bhante, the question I had was actually not in relation to this one. I had this since last week. It's a completely different question. I'm not sure if there's time for it today.
Sorry, can you repeat the statement?
Yeah, it's not in relation to this particular question. It's a separate question altogether, if there is time.
Okay. I thought that you are explaining the Anusaya and Asava.
No.
Okay. So, so there is, I mean, there are certain, equalities between these Asava and Anusaya, because, Kama Asava has a relationship with the Raga Anusaya. And then Bhava Raga Anusaya is also a type of Kama Asrava. Because Kama Ashrava means the kind of influx of sensuality and the desire for that sensuality is the Raga Anusaya. And again, the Kama Raga Anusaya. the Bhavaraga Anusaya. So likewise, there are different variants available. Like today we have different variants to COVID. So likewise, so different variants are available. And into the craving. The very fundamental thing is the craving. And craving has three types. Say, kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. Similarly, the tanha is explained in the raga anusaya. And that when it is going to various levels of becoming, then it is explained as bhava raga anusaya. And it is represented in the influx level as kama asrava. And there are different types of asava. Influxes are there to various sensual objects. Now, there are certain similarities as well, and there may be subtle differences as well. So it is, I mean, as I mentioned, anusaya is very much like a latent tendency. At the moment, it is not visible. Similarly, asava has happened because of the continuous association, for long-term association with a certain pattern, and that pattern has become kind of an inherent quality, and that is the way that you are going to behave. So these are, in a way, looking at in, I mean, same thing, looking at it at different angles, in a way. Yeah. So what is your question? Someone want to have a question?
Just give me 1 second. I'll find.
Hi, I'm sorry, Bhante. I'm not sure if you can hear me properly. I actually asked this question through the form earlier, but I didn't get a chance to sort of clarify your response. Basically, when I meditate, ideally I do this like a Kamadahan situation, but apparently I was told that it's not possible. But when I sort of I used to do a fair bit of meditation, and sort of day-to-day experience-wise, like, I tend to hear, like, sounds and feelings and things quite objectively. And you said that it was a good development. But at the same time, because unlike some of the discussions that went on today, I'm obviously not in isolation, like I go out to society and that, I still continue to have the usual issues, like the, you know, certain anxieties, certain angers, and the usual, all the usual things that, you know, someone who's not obviously enlightened would have. So I'm just not sure, like, how I can use the practice that I've done quite well so far, I think, in order to sort of make myself feel a bit more comfortable in some of these situations. Yeah. And ideally, like, progress through the path as well, because at the moment it's a bit ambiguous. I've got sort of both things going on.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, you can't actually purify yourself immediately, so these improvements in the mind may happen gradually. I mean, at the beginning you recognize these shortcomings, so recognizing these shortcomings is also a blessing, because typically what happens is we simply become victims of these shortcomings. I mean, there are various patterns going on, there are various habits going on, and we become helpless victims of these habits, these defilements. But at least when you are able to recognize, I have these kind of shortcomings, I become angry, I become lustful, I become jealous, likewise, I mean, you can't still stop it, but at least you understand it, you recognize it. That is it. Then you are in a better position slowly to overcome them. And that will happen slowly as you develop mindfulness. So all these emotions, all these tendencies, thinking patterns, habits, etc., become more and more evident to you. And you may be able to understand them. They are at their early stages. Then you don't need to simply follow them. Then you have a kind of a choice. You understand, okay, there is a situation, this person is doing well, and now I am getting a jealous available in the mind. Last time, when I feel jealous, I couldn't stop it. I made a kind of a hint. So because of the jealousy, I have reacted like that. But now, today, again, I am feeling jealous. Now I recognize it, but I am not acting according to it. It may be telling me to do something, but I am not following it. So likewise, now our own shortcomings, understanding our own these kind of habits, shortcomings is quite important. And the important thing, other important thing is now we are not following them. We recognizing them and simply allow them to fade away. And we are no more victim of these different types of mental qualities. So that is how we have to slowly weaken all these different types of defilements. And Buddha mentioned, and panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba. Lobo bhikkhave na kaya na pahatabbo na vachaya panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba. So likewise, he mentioned to many, many defilements that all these different types of defilements you have to see clearly through your wisdom. That is the only way to overcome them. It may happen gradually, so it's a matter of continuing your practice.
Yeah. So would you recommend being mindful and observing the mind in this situation as opposed to sort of going to the breath, like I've heard some people say, or looking at the sensation where the anger is or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, if you are able to look at anger as anger without participating there, without being a victim there, then you can do it. So that is, I mean, that is where you need some preliminary practice through Kayanupassana, through Vedananupassana. If you are practicing mindfulness, then you have some confidence, you have some developed mindfulness. So with, and again, the clarity of mind and clear comprehension to recognize anger as anger. So then you are in a better position to handle it. So if you can handle it, you can give it a try. No harm.
Okay, that should be enough for me to go on with. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Then we can wind up, Chatu.
Yeah, we've gone over time, so we'll finish up very quickly. I'd like to first thank Bhante and pass on our merits for this program. So for the people working behind the scenes and also those seen and unseen participating. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, this wouldn't happen. I'll just make one quick point. This is probably the first question that we had where it was a conversation with Bhante. So I would really encourage, if you have questions, to put it like that, that way you get two-way conversation and not just one-way sort of answer.
Yeah, that one's online.